Our first lesson this morning comes from the book of Psalms, Psalm 96. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. Sing to the Lord, bless his name. Tell of his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous works among all the peoples. For great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised. He is to be revered above all gods. For all the gods of the peoples are idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Honor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of the peoples. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. Worship the Lord in holy splendor. Tremble before him, all the earth. Say among the nations, the Lord is king. The world is firmly established. It shall never be moved. He will judge the peoples with equity. Let the heavens be glad and let the earth rejoice. Let the sea roar and all that fills it. Let the field exult and everything in it. Then shall all the trees of the forest sing for joy before the Lord. For he is coming to judge the earth. He will judge the world with righteousness and the peoples with his truth.
The second lesson comes to us from the Gospel according to St. Luke in the 7th chapter. Listen for the word of the Lord. After Jesus had finished all of his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. A centurion there had a slave whom he highly valued and who was ill and close to death. When the centurion heard about Jesus, he sent some Jewish elders to him, asking him to come and heal his slave. When they came to Jesus, they appealed to him earnestly, saying, "He is worthy of having you do this for him, for he loves our people, and it is he who built our synagogue for us." And Jesus went with them. And when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to say to him, "Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Therefore, I did not presume to come to you, but only speak the word, and let my servant be healed. For I am also a man set under authority with soldiers under me. And I say to one, 'Go,' and he goes, and to another, 'Come,' and he comes, and to my slave, 'Do this,' and the slave does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd that followed him, Jesus said, "I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith." When those who had been sent returned to the house, they found the slave in good health. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, I have to thank the choir for offering such a beautiful prayer for illumination this morning. So let's just get right to the text, right? It says that Jesus had said all of his sayings. Jesus had been out preaching. That's what Jesus had been up to before he came to Capernaum. Now, these weren't sweet, everyday stories about shepherds looking for lost lambs. No, in chapter 6, we hear Jesus preaching with a capital P. He's preaching some of his best sermons you'll ever hear. So those lesser-known passages, "Blessed are the poor, for they shall inherit the kingdom of heaven." It's the sermon where he reminds his newly minted disciples and all those who followed after him that we are to love our enemies, to be merciful, to lend without expectation of return, not to judge. And he ends that great sermon by saying that our lives will produce fruit. And a good life will produce good fruit. Jesus has been talking and talking and talking, and Luke has set it up. that now you're ready for Jesus to do something, right? You're waiting for an action. Jesus has put you on, well, the Gospel of Luke and Jesus combined have put you on the very edge of your seat. Did you know that? Are you there right now? Are you this excited? Because you should be, because Jesus is heading into Capernaum and you know that something great is about to happen. Capernaum was a town in Galilee up north in the rolling hills. Jesus was well known there. He had healed there before. He had preached there. The people knew him well. In fact, back in his hometown of Nazareth, they would even shout out, "Do in your hometown like you have done in Capernaum." The people knew Jesus would do something great. They understood the community. Peter's mother-in-law lived there. Matthew had had his tax office there. In a sense, Jesus was like LeBron James coming back to Cleveland. People were expecting great things. And for anyone who is counting, that is, in fact, the first sports reference I have ever made in a sermon. So it's a historic day. The gospel has us sitting, waiting to see what will happen next. And after a lot of talking, we're ready for the action. And just as Jesus enters, the opportunity arrives. A centurion has a much-loved slave, a servant in his household who was important to him, and he had heard that Jesus could do amazing things, so he decides to reach out. As a centurion, as we learned this morning already, he was a mid-level officer in the Roman military. He was responsible for a command, and in fact, in this particular case, he was probably overseeing the occupying force in that region where Jesus lived. He had power. He had connections. He knew how to get things done. A man who controls the local army, this is the man who decides to reach out to Jesus. But he's not the one to speak. First, you have community leaders, the elders, arrive to speak on his behalf. And they don't pull Jesus aside and say, "Hey, look, we don't want any trouble here. Can you just help out the centurion?" They don't pull him aside and say, "It'll make it a lot easier for us if you would just heal this man." No, they come to Jesus and they talk about the centurion's quality. They say he's worthy, a righteous man, a good man, a man who loves them. And after preaching those sermons beforehand about loving enemies and not judging, those elders show up asking Jesus if he's ready to live out that sermon and not just preach it. And of course, Jesus does. He heads over to the centurion's house, and before he can get to the front door, friends of the centurion rush out to meet him and deliver a message. His message counters what the elders had just said. He says, "I'm not worthy for you to come under my roof. I'm not even going to presume to come into your presence. Just say the word." His message is a testimony to good military training, to a good chain of command, to Roman efficiency. If an officer speaks, the word is carried out. If Jesus speaks, nothing more is needed. No ritual, no incantations, no medicine, no hand resting over the injured. Just say the word. Let me pause for a moment here. In the midst of all the elders and the friends and the disciples and the dust on the street, did you catch that in Luke's gospel, we never actually see the centurion? The centurion stays away at a distance with absolute faith that Jesus can and will heal his servant. The man who becomes the exemplar of our faith is never actually seen. When Matthew gives his account of this exact same moment in Jesus' ministry, the centurion is the one who meets Jesus. They have this exchange face to face. There are no elders, no friends, no dramatic pause on the way to the house. Of course, artists love Matthew's account because you get to have a centurion talking to Jesus. It's high drama, right? But that's not the picture that Luke paints. Jesus is surrounded by a crowd made up of friends and colleagues, of a man who remains unseen. On the streets of Capernaum, friends and community leaders are standing in for a man who feels that he is unworthy of even being in Jesus' presence. They stand on his behalf. They speak the words he cannot speak himself. The centurion understood the rules that if Jesus came into his home, Jesus would be ritually unclean. And the centurion knew that despite the synagogue he built and the position he held, he was not part of the in crowd of Capernaum. He is literally outside the circle. And he's asking for those who have a way in to help call the town hero and save his friends. Of all the characters in the Bible, and of all the healing stories we might read, there is something unbelievably real about the centurion. Someone who understands power, who has resources, who finds himself in a place where his office, his connections, and even a Roman legion can't solve his problem. We understand what it means to have systems in place, don't we? That we know where our resources are, we know the people we should call, and while we may not have 100 soldiers at our disposal, we understand what needs to happen to get things done. And yet, there are moments and there are days and there are seasons when that's still not enough. I struggle with healing stories. I usually try to avoid them when they show up in the lectionary because to me, they sit in this challenging place between a miracle and salt in a wound. In a world filled with suffering and tragedy, what makes the centurion's servant the one who is saved? Although biblical scholars disagree as to whether or not we can really know, church tradition tells us that Luke, the gospel writer, was a physician. And I love imagining him as a doctor, because I could imagine that as a doctor, he knew the challenges of the human body, the frailty of life. And I believe that he understood the inherent challenges of these texts. If he had spent his life sitting with those trying to stop pain and suffering, infection and disease, he knew that sometimes the best resources, the greatest skills, that those can't change the outcome. He had been there in those desperate moments. As a pastor, I've stood in hospital rooms, and I know that healing isn't about who is worthy and who is unworthy. I know that sometimes it's just hard to be in those places and not know what the next day will bring, to offer up a prayer and not know what the answer will be. When Luke shares a healing story, he doesn't do that to try to say that someone is perfect. He does that to capture a moment where we learn something new about Jesus Christ, when we see the Master at work in our very human condition. We can feel for the centurion. And maybe this morning some of you feel like you have been in a very similar place. Maybe you're in that place today, sitting beside a friend, a member of your household, one you care deeply about and not knowing what to do next. So you start reaching out, having to trust that others are speaking on your behalf. A mentor of mine, when he first started in ministry, was taking care of a rural congregation out in the middle of nowhere, a 50-person parish, right? And he had the audacity of going on his first vacation. And there he was with his 3 small children on the beaches of California when he got a phone call saying that one of the dear women in his church was about to die. And he didn't know how he could get back in time, and he was stuck there, and the nurse said, "Can you just pray? I'll stretch the phone as close as I can get, and I'll repeat the words for you." And it ended up that they needed to have 4 people to make that chain, from him on the phone, to the nurse at the station, to the person he whispered to, and on to the woman there about to go to glory. It was a prayer. And the outcome didn't change, but there in that moment, a perfect chain was formed that sometimes our words pass on, one after another, as we offer a desperate plea of please to God in an unknown moment. On the surface, this could be just another healing story. A desperate man, an impossible situation, and Jesus being called to intervene. A please uttered at a bedside with an uncertain future. It is in this moment, though, that Luke shifts the story. Instead of Jesus marching into the house and healing the man, Jesus stops and is amazed. Do you notice that? Jesus is not typically, in fact, at no other point in the gospel, is Jesus the one to be amazed. People are amazed by Jesus, right? That's his job, to be amazing. Centurions are not amazing. But here in the streets of Capernaum, Jesus is amazed. Was he amazed because all of these people came out to speak for a centurion? Was he amazed because the centurion would use all of his social capital to heal a slave? Was he amazed that there wasn't a team of soldiers waiting to march him along in case he didn't want to come? Was he amazed that it was a centurion who showed such unwavering trust that he, not his disciples, could see that Jesus was the one with authority and with power? Whatever caused the amazement, we know at the end the servant was healed. But how? Let me share the piece of the puzzle that utterly befuddles me. Jesus never speaks the word, be healed. He never speaks the word that the centurion asked for. He never says, let it be so. He never says, it is done. But it happens. Without flashing lights or even a word, the servant is healed. And it wasn't a word that Jesus spoke, but it was a word that the community lived. A man reached out in his desperation to the people around him. When he felt unworthy, others stood in his space, place and spoke of his quality. When Jesus came close, he had friends rush to make up the difference between the two of them. When he couldn't speak, his friends spoke for him. Jesus never had to say the word, be healed, because it was a prayer living in the actions of the centurion and the elders and the friends. It wasn't a moment for the crowd to be wowed by Jesus, but rather it was a moment for Jesus to stand in awe. I don't know about the rest of you, but I certainly don't have the centurion's faith. I wish I did. And maybe some of you have it, and I'd like to sit close to you and learn more from you, but for the rest of us, the story is important. Because maybe when you don't have the centurion's faith, you can be the one who walks ahead of a friend who is lost, who can speak someone's quality when they have forgotten that about themselves. That when they can't utter the words, that you might speak for them, that you might offer that prayer. Because that's the gift we've been given, is to be in community and to know the longings of the people around us, to be able to intercess for those we love and even those we don't know. To be the one whispering from the phone to the person next, until those words are heard. And I know that the outcome isn't always perfect. But friends, we're called to be a part of it. And that is indeed amazing. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen.